Hello and welcome to Attaboy Clarence, again, episode 8. As usual, this is brought to you by Amazon. Go to attaboyclarence.com, click on the Attaboy Clarence podcast link, and scroll down till you see an Amazon banner. Click on that, then do all your shopping through Amazon. Thank you very much. If you could all step it up with the purchases, please. I'm hoping to be a millionaire by the summer. So far, I've made an absolute tenner through this. Remember to go to the Facebook page, that's facebook.com/attaboyclarence, and like the page, and follow me on Twitter at @attaboyc, @attaboyc. Admin for this week, done. Shockingly short this week, because I am tired of listening to myself at the beginning of these shows being boring. I reserve that right for the rest of the show, thank you very much. I do have some hellos, some shout-outs for this week, though. First of all, to the Bad Ideas podcast. They very kindly discovered the show through the Rathbone Bruce documentary and gave me a shout-out on their episode last week, so thank you very much, and hi back to you. I have now subscribed to that podcast and like it very much, thank you. It's basically a discussion of geek culture, films, movies, games, everything I like. So, hey guys, much love, put her there, back at you, etc., etc. Also, a very... very big hello to everyone at otrplus.com. I was checking through my referrals this week, having a look at where people are coming from to the site, where they're coming from Facebook or Twitter or from Google, and I saw OTR Plus mentioned numerous times, so I went over to the site to see why they were coming. And I found a very, very, very flattering post by a man named Paul, who had recommended me to everyone at otrplus.com. He was extremely generous with his comments, and I just want to say thank you very much. I've looked through the site and think it's a fantastic site, especially if you're into old-time radio. I urge anyone that's enjoyed any of the episodes that I've produced to go to otrplus.com and sign up. I certainly have. And can I just say to you all that it's fantastic to see people who are truly passionate about old-time radio actively discussing it. Most of the forums I visited that are to do with old-time radio are, I'm going to be controversial, a little bit half-hearted. I'm sure there are some brilliant ones out there. Maybe I've just been unlucky. But yeah, I must say, otrplus.com, everyone there seems to know their stuff. They're all really passionate about old-time radio. They even have a Jolly Boys Club, which instantly makes me think of the great Gildersleeve. Yeah. And yeah, you're just all fabulous people. And thank you so much if you've come from there and have listened to the show. I very much appreciate it. The comments keep coming in regarding the Rathbone Bruce documentary, which was episode 6. And it's been a bit overwhelming, actually. So thank you if you've been in contact, mainly over email, I'd say. I really, really appreciate all your kind words, and I'm very, very glad that you've all enjoyed the episode. What I've decided to do from now on, for anyone who's listened to the show from episode 1, which was god-awful, by the way, can I just say to anyone who's just subscribed, I apologise from the bottom of my heart for episode 1. I look back on it with utter shame. As Sean Connery once said...
Oh, it breaks the heart.
It really does. apologies. The radio played's great. Roland Young, of course. Awesome. But I was terrible. I'm very sorry. The sound quality was appalling. It got better from episode 2. I would... well, almost. If it hadn't been for the Brighton Strangler causing me to have a fit of laughter.
Canterbury.
But yes, can I say that from now on, the case will be with this podcast that I will be doing 4 normal episodes, and every 5th episode... from now, will be a documentary, because I enjoyed making the Rathbone Bruce one so much that I've decided to do it again. I'm currently working on one entitled Sex in Monochrome, and it's all about cinema before the Hayes Office of Censors took control of Hollywood's output in 1934. So if that subject interests you, remember to stay subscribed, because it'll be coming up in episode 11. So let's get straight on to movies. First movie I watched this week, The Devil's Party from 1938, starring Victor McLaglen and Paul Kelly. It's based on a book. I love this book title. The book title is Hell's Kitchen has a pantry.
Hell's Kitchen has a pantry.
It's about a gang of kids called the Death Avenue Cowboys, and when the kids, they romp around Hell's Kitchen. One in particular is called Marty. He's sent to a reformatory for taking the blame when they break into a property. And when he gets out, he becomes a criminal and eventually a club owner. Two of the gang, Joe and Mike, who are brothers, become cops. And the last one, Jerry, becomes a priest. There's a girl in the gang, and her name's Helen, and she becomes a nightclub singer. And she's a singer at Marty's club. It's called the Cigarette Club. Imaginative name. Marty has loaned some money to a chap, and he wants it back, so he sends two of his thugs to go and get the money back, and they rough him up, but they accidentally kill him, and they try to make it look as though it's an accident, but they don't do a very good job.
He's a little fresh. Sold him down a bit. If you have to push him around, do it gently. Just, teach him how to write a good check.
Well, treat him like a brother.
This coincides with a yearly reunion that the Death Avenue Cowboys have every year at Marty's club. And the two brothers, Joe and Mike, tell Marty that they suspect, because they're looking into the death of this guy, that it wasn't an accident. It might have been murder.
A man was murdered tonight up in the Swell apartment on Columbus Circle.
Murdered?
That's Joe's theory. The detectives reported it an accident.
The guys that murdered this fellow Brewster wanted it to look like an accident.
Wait a minute. Did you say his name was Brewster?
Yeah. James Brewster. What's the matter, Marty? You know him?
Well, he was a very good customer of mine. What makes you think he was murdered?
A big electric sign fell on him, only it didn't just fall, it was pushed. After one of the supporting stanchions had been cut clean with a chisel.
This came out in 1938, and it's actually quite similar to Angels with Dirty Faces. You know, you've got a notorious gangster who's he's remained close to his childhood friends. It's set in the tenements of New York. There's even a priest called Jerry. And I would have said that this was a pretty terrible rip-off of Angels with Dirty Faces, but it came out in May 1938, and Angels with Dirty Faces came out in November of 1938. So it actually predates Angels with Dirty Faces. So I'm thinking that maybe Angels with Dirty Faces took elements from this film, because it's a far, far superior film to The Devil's Party. The Devil's Party looks as though it had no budget whatsoever. And the acting is okay, but Victor McLaglen is horribly miscast in this film. When he's a kid and he's romping around Hell's Kitchen, breaking windows, he has the really strong New York accent. But when he's Victor McLaglen later in life, he has a very, very thick Irish accent. That wasn't an Irish accent at all. I apologise. Yeah, his accent is, you know, thick Irish, and does it, you know, you keep thinking, where was this reformatory? Was it in Dublin? And the thing is as well, he's a giant man, isn't he, Victor McLaglen? But he's strangely unthreatening in this. He has some scenes with Helen, and he's so big and dumb. He's very unthreatening in this film, and I think it needed a big threatening presence to have worked. He's just really hard to buy as a criminal in this. It's strange because he was a superb lowlife in John Ford's The Informer from a few years earlier. I wanted to tell you about The Devil's Party also because of Paul Kelly, who plays Father Jerry. He had a crazy life. I remember seeing him first in The Roaring Twenties. He was Nick Brown, the rival gang leader. He was James Cagney's rival, and they kept stealing his liquor all the time.
Hey, before you go to it, you and me better have a talk. You're heading for trouble. This is Nick Brown's boat.
Annie, keep that stuff moving fast. We got to get it all off before daylight.
It's moving.
He's on the other side of the law in this. He's Father Jerry Donovan, and he's pretty good. I remember telling you in episode 6, the Rathbone Bruce documentary, that after Basil Rathbone left the Sherlock Holmes role, he went on the stage and starred in The Heiress. And in 1948, he was nominated for the Tony Award for Best Actor. Well, Paul Kelly is the man that beat him to that award that night. He won the award for his role in Command Performance. And he announced on stage, while he was accepting the award, that he wanted to share it with Basil Rathbone and Henry Fonda, who'd been nominated for Mr. Roberts, this stage production, before it became a movie. In 1927, though, he had a fist fight with an actor called Ray Raymond. Imaginative parents there. And a couple of days after the fight, Raymond died from his injuries. Well, Paul Kelly was sent to San Quentin for 25 months for manslaughter. The crazy thing about it is that a couple of years after he got out, he played Warden Duffy, who was a real-life warden, in a film called Duffy of San Quentin. So he basically went from being an inmate of San Quentin to being the boss of the place. I guess he must have kept his nose clean. But it gets weirder, because later he married Ray Raymond's widow, Dorothy McKay, and because everyone assumed that Paul Kelly had killed Ray Raymond because he was involved with her before the killing, she was sent to prison too, as an accomplice to the manslaughter. She wrote a book about it called Women in Prison, which was turned into a 1933 movie called Ladies They Talk About, which starred Barbara Stanwyck. Paul Kelly, very interesting life. I also watched Footlight Parade from 1933 with Jimmy Cagney and Joan Blondell and Ruby Keeler and Dick Powell and Frank McHugh. James Cagney is Chester Kent in this. He's a Broadway musical director who sees his livelihood disappear when talking movies come in. Because no one wants to see musical comedies on the stage, they can see them on the screen now for a fraction of the price. So he decides to organise pre-movie shows for the theatre audiences, sort of a pre-movie entertainment that really used to take place. People don't really get it now, but when you used to go to the movies, it wasn't a two-hour experience like it is now. There used to be a newsreel, a cartoon. There would sometimes be a short educational film, maybe about geography or something. And there was a live musical performance before the movie, or sometimes there were two movies. They were called prologues, and Footlight Parade is all about the backstage goings-on behind the shows.
When you put on one prologue, it's too expensive. But when the same prologue plays 25, 50, 100 houses, it doesn't cost a cent more. Get it?
We might have something there.
Yeah?
Oh, the same scenery, same costumes. Put them on once and they stay put on.
But we've only got four theaters.
Lay them all over Chicago, all over the country. Exhibitors everywhere. We tickle pink to get ready-made prologue.
How do you know?
It's a cinch, because you can give them swell prologues cheaper than they can put them on themselves. And why? Because you're in the chain store business.
Si, he's right.
It's a really charming film, and it's a radical change of pace for Cagney, who was smack bang in the middle of his tough guy period here. Like, this is right between Lady Killer and The Mayor of Hell, and a year before the Hayes Office of Censors came in. It really shows. There's an awful lot of flesh on show in this film. Really quite racy stuff, especially during a synchronized swimming sequence at the end. And really, nothing is left to the imagination. There's lots of close-ups and, yeah, I mean, there's lots of this underwater cam, shall we say? And the dialogue, too. It's for its day. It's pretty risque. Here's a clip.
How dare you, my fiancé.
Now, you scram before I wrap a chair around your neck.
But it's 3 o'clock in the morning. Where do you want me to go?
Go to
listen, you chief stenographer.
Outside, Countess. As long as they have sidewalks, you've got a job.
If you enjoyed Cagney's dancing in Yankee Doodle Dandy, that fabulous dance he does down the steps is unparalleled. But if you enjoyed him in that, then you'll love him in this, because he dances throughout most of the film. And at the end, he actually sings the Shanghai Lil number, and it's great stuff.
Hello, Bill, you old galoot. Where'd you get that monkey suit?
Don't tell anyone you saw me, or I'll wrap you in the snoot.
Hey, you jump ship. Now, what's your game?
Oh, just looking for a dame.
Staying here, you're taking chances.
Yeah? Well, I'll stay just the same.
I've covered every little highway, and I've been climbing every hill. I've been looking high, and I've been looking low, looking for my Shanghai Lil. The stars that hang high over Shanghai bring back the memory of a thrill. I've been looking high, and I've been looking low, looking for my Shanghai Lil.
It's also massively impressive on a visual scale. Busby Berkeley choreographed the whole thing, and I know that's anathema to some people, but I would say if you're not a fan of the old-style Busby Berkeley movies, then you should really try this movie. My family are all ages. I have a 5-year-old, 7-year-old, an 11-year-old, and a 32-year-old wife. They were in and out of the room while I was watching this, and they all stopped what they were doing when they saw what I was watching and just gawked at the screen. It is amazing to watch. There are three set pieces, shall we say, towards the end of the movie. They're all quite short as well. The first one is called The Honeymoon Hotel, and it's brilliantly done. It's an actual romantic comedy set to music and done in a few minutes, and it's so utterly charming. Wait till you see it.
Number 2. I think we ought to see her through.
when you're here a week, then you're qualified to speak. Let's tell her what it's all about.
My dear, will you come out? Oh, I'm glad it's you. I feel so nervous. I don't know my husband very well. Husbands are a feature of the service at the honeymoon hotel. Gee, I'm sorry that I ever left my little home in New Rochelle. Wait a while, you want to stay forever.
At the honeymoon hotel.
That's followed by another production called By a Waterfall, where hundreds of girls make the most hypnotic patterns in the water using their bodies before turning into a giant human waterfall. It's massively impressive. You need to see it. And it's finished by the Shanghai Lil number, where Cagney steps in for the guy that has to drop out at the last minute. And he sings and dances with Ruby Keeler, telling the story of this soldier who's in love with a prostitute. And it's movie magic. You just need to see this movie. It's absolutely fantastic. The Shanghai Lil number is quite racist, I won't lie to you. Yeah, it's a bit shocking, maybe, if you're sensitive to that kind of thing. There's a moment when she appears from a box and introduces herself to the audience with the line,
I miss you very much a long time. I think that you no love me still.
It's all tied together with an awesome cast. It's Dick Powell, James Cagney, Guy Kibbe, Frank McHugh, it's another Bluebeard's eighth wife situation happening here. Ruth Donnelly, Joan Blondell is absolutely fantastic in this film. She's Cagney's secretary. She is brilliant. I love Joan Blondell. Last film I watched, Merrily We Go to Hell from 1932. I thought this was going to be a romantic comedy. It's certainly not a romantic comedy at all. It stars Frederick March as an alcoholic journalist who marries Sylvia Sidney, who's a young heiress, and she's utterly devoted to him, but he treats her really badly and spends the whole film off his trolley, and it's the story of their turbulent marriage together. He has affairs, so to spite him, she has one too with Cary Grant, who gets 10th billing here. This is a very early appearance from him. The film itself is very, very melodramatic, but it's also quite brave to deal with alcoholism like this. It all goes along quite predictably until the end, when a certain tragic event takes place, which is actually rather shocking, I would say. I have to say, Frederick March in this is a scary, scary drunk. You know, when he drinks, he almost loses his humanity. It's blank stares, completely vacant eyes. He's like a stranger. And when you see him from scene to scene, where he's gregarious and outgoing, and then all of a sudden he takes a drink and he turns into this terrifying ghost of a man. It's a very brave portrayal.
He didn't mean to do it, Joan. It was the excitement as much as the liquor.
But you don't understand. This is my announcement party. He can't do this to me. Help me do something. Oh, Charlie, we've got to do something. We haven't done anything.
Well, I did everything possible. Gave him a shower and walked him all over the lakefront, but he passed out on me in the cab. I thought maybe by the time we got over here that...
Oh, Chelsea, I can't go back in there. I just couldn't stand the humiliation. I simply couldn't. I couldn't. Joan! Joan!
And Sylvia Sidney is absolutely exquisite in this film. Not only does she give an impressive performance as this sort of young, wide-eyed ingenue who slowly becomes this world-weary, beaten-down woman, but she's so utterly beautiful in this film that it hurts your eyes to look at her. I mean, the film I remember her for the most is Sabotage, the Alfred Hitchcock film, but she is absolutely jaw-droppingly beautiful. She was 22 in this film, and she reminds me so much of the supermodel from today, Miranda Kerr. Anyway, amazing stuff. Not for the squeamish, and certainly not a romantic comedy. But yeah, definitely worth a look. I have a competition for you all this week. You can win the Blu-ray of The Towering Inferno. It's not exactly the era of movies that I usually cover. It's a slightly later movie, but nevertheless, I have a copy to give away. And if you would like to win it, then come back after this week's radio play and I'll tell you how. The radio play for this week is a romantic affair. It also helps that it's a great piece of comedy too. I needed to see Ernst Lubitsch firing on all cylinders after the disappointment of Bluebeard's eighth wife, which I can say perfectly now. So I picked one of his greatest stories for you for this week, which I'm sure you'll all be familiar with already. It's one of the best romantic comedies ever made, and I'd really like to take the opportunity of dedicating it this week to a pal who I know holds it in the highest regard. So, Mike, this one's for you.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, for our first production of the season, we bring you Margaret Sullivan, James Stewart, and Frank Morgan in The Shop Around the Corner.
Well, The Shop Around the Corner, they call this story. And do you know whose shop? Matuszek & Company, novelties and leatherware. Best of its kind in Budapest. It really is. Wonderful values at all times. In fact, I don't know how Matuszek & Company does it.
Just a moment, please. Who are you?
Me? Well, I'm Matuszek.
Oh.
Yes, well, anyhow, it all happened in my store. Practically all. That's why I'm telling it. Well, this is the story of two young people of whom I'm very fond, Clara and Martin. Clara is very attractive, yes. She's most attractive. And an excellent sales girl. But Martin and Clara haven't gotten on at all from the very first day she came to work for me. Professional jealousy on Martin's part, because no head clerk likes to have an assistant, especially such a pretty assistant, outsell him.
Oh, Miss Novak, whatever became of those musical cigarette boxes that nobody ever buys?
I just sold the last one, Mr. Martin.
Oh. Can I show you something, madam?
No, thank you. I prefer to have the young lady wait on me.
Oh. Well, I've had a pretty good day. My sales come to exactly 176 kronen.
My sales come to 250 kronen.
Oh.
Yes, you can easily see how these little occurrences would hardly make for a beautiful friendship. But all this didn't seem very important to Martin these days. He had something else on his mind. Martin was living in a romantic plane, far above the everyday routine of Matuszek & Company. I found that out one day when I chanced to overhear him talking with a fellow clerk named Pirovich.
Nice,
Pirovich.
Yes. What is it? It's a letter from a girl. Now, listen. My heart was trembling as I walked into the post office. And there you were, lying in box 237. And I took you out of your envelope and read you. I read you right there. Oh, dear friend. What is all this?
Well, you see, I was looking through the ads in the Sunday paper, and I got on the wrong page, and I ran across this ad. Here, let me show it to you, see?
Modern girl wishes to correspond on cultural subjects anonymously with intelligent, sympathetic young man. Address, dear friend, post office 15, box 237.
Now, we've exchanged four letters, and Pirovich, she's no ordinary girl. Now, listen to this. Are you tall or short? Are your eyes brown? Are they blue? Now, don't tell me. What does it matter so long as our minds meet?
You're right. It is beautiful.
Yes, now listen. What are men and women for but to rise above the stupid necessities of the eight-hour day?
That sounds very nice, Martin, but you really should...
Oh, excuse me, Pirovich. Miss Novak, where do you think you're going?
I'm going home, Mr. Martin. It's 6 o'clock.
It's 6:05. This store does not close for another 5 minutes. I'm afraid, Miss Novak, that you don't take your work very seriously.
Oh, don't I?
No, and I don't like your attitude.
Listen, let me tell you something.
Yes, and while I think of it, I don't like the clothes you've been wearing in the store. For instance, that yellow blouse with the light green dots you had
on
yesterday.
A green blouse with light yellow dots. Everybody else thought it was very becoming.
Yes.
And well, I don't remember that I ever remarked about your neckties. And believe me, Mr. Martin, if you think I couldn't say anything about your necktie, so I'll thank you to leave my blouse alone. It's none of your business.
Well, I'm very sorry, but Mr. Matuszek seems to think it is my business.
Oh, yes, that's right. I'm working under you. Well, from now on, I'll telephone you every morning, describe just exactly what I'm going to wear. And before I select my next season's wardrobe, my dressmaker will submit samples for you. Imagine you dictating what I should
wear.
Well,
for heaven's sake, I don't care what you wear. If you want to look like a pony in the circus, all right.
Listen, I sold as much goods yesterday as anybody else in the place. 197 kronen isn't bad for a rainy Friday 3 weeks before Christmas. Did you tell that to Mr. Matuszek?
I did.
What did he say?
He said, tell her not to come in that blouse anymore.
Tell him I won't.
I will.
Now, come. Always fighting you two. Why don't you try to get along better?
I'd like to know who could get along with a man like him. Oh, it is now exactly 6 o'clock, Mr. Martin. May I go?
Yes, Miss Novak.
Oh, thank you very much.
Stubborn little female. I don't know why we ever hired that girl.
Now, don't get yourself all worked up. Calm down.
Sure. What do I care about a girl like that?
Forget her. Tell me more about that girl you've been writing to, you know, dear friend.
Hmm? What?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Kervitz, she's wonderful. She's... Well, you know, after a while, in our letters, we came to the subject of love. Well, naturally, on a very cultural level.
What else can you do in a letter?
No. But Pirovich, she's the most marvelous girl in the world. She has such ideals, such a point of view on things. Why, she's so far above the girls you meet today, there's simply no comparison.
You really like her, don't you?
I hope I will.
What do you mean? You love a girl and you don't know if you like her?
That's right, Pirovich. That's just the question. You see, I haven't met her yet.
You haven't what? After all this time?
I postponed it again and again. I'm scared, Pirovich. You see, this girl thinks I'm the most wonderful person in the world, and after all, there's a chance she might be disappointed.
I see.
But tonight, I'm taking the risk. I'm meeting her tonight at 8 o'clock in a cafe. She's going to have a copy of Tolstoy's Anna Karenina and a red carnation for a bookmark. Oh, I haven't slept for days.
I'm sure she'll be beautiful.
Well, not too beautiful. What chance would there be for a fella like me?
What do you want, a homely girl?
No. Just a lovely average girl, that's all.
That's the clock in the back of my shop striking 8 p.m. And that's exactly the hour Martin was to meet dear friend for the first time at the cafe. Well, when the time came, Martin didn't feel quite so brave, so he asked Pirovich to come along to give him moral support. And even after he got there, he was afraid to go in. He stood with Pirovich in a shadow outside the front window and peered in. He wanted Pirovich to see if he could spot a girl with a red carnation for a bookmark.
Not yet. There's a beautiful girl.
Really?
Very beautiful. But no book.
Oh, too bad.
Wait a minute. I think I see it. Right here under the window. Yeah. Anna Karenina by Tolstoy. And a carnation.
Yes. Well, what does she look like?
Well, I can't see her face. She's sitting behind a clothes rack. There's a cup of coffee on the table. She's taking a piece of cake. Martin, she's dunking.
Well, why shouldn't she?
Oh, all right.
What else, Pirovich? How does she look?
Well, I can't see her face yet. Don't shove me, Martin. She's leaning forward now. Well, can you see her?
Yes.
Is she pretty?
Very pretty.
She is, huh?
I would say she looks... She has a little of the coloring of Clara.
Clara?
Well, you mean Miss Novak of the shop?
Oh, Martin, you must admit that Clara is a good-looking girl, and personally, I've always found her a very likable girl.
Well, this is a fine time to be talking about Miss Novak.
Well, if you don't like Miss Novak, I can tell you right now you won't like this girl.
Why?
Because it is Miss Novak.
Well, Martin was all for turning on his heel and starting home, but his friend Pirovich pointed out that Miss Novak had written those letters. And it really wasn't fair to the girl to leave her waiting there. Much against his will, Martin finally agreed to go inside the cafe and talk to Miss Novak.
Well, hello, Miss Novak.
Oh, good evening, Mr. Martin.
Well, that's what a coincidence. I had an appointment. You haven't seen Mr. Pirovich by any chance, have you?
No, I haven't.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess I'll wait. Mind if I sit down?
Yes, I do. Please. Mr. Martin, I have an appointment, too.
Oh. Well, there's no harm just sitting here, is there? Oh, I see you're reading Tolstoy's Anna Karenina.
Yes? Anything against it?
Oh, no. I never expected to meet you in a cafe with Tolstoy. It's quite a surprise. I didn't know you went in for the higher literature.
Right? Yes. Well, there's so many things you don't know about me, Mr. Martin.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever read Crime and Punishment by Dostoevsky?
No, I haven't.
I have. Yeah. A lot of things you don't know about me, too, Miss Novak. You know, people People seldom go to the trouble of scratching the surface of things to find the inward truth.
Really, Mr. Martin, I wouldn't care at all to scratch your surface. Probably because I know exactly what I'd find. A handbag instead of a heart, a suitcase instead of a soul, instead of an intellect, a cigarette lighter that doesn't work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that very well put. Now, comparing my intellect with a cigarette lighter that doesn't work, that's a very interesting mixture of poetry and meanness.
Meanness?
Oh, don't understand me, Miss Novak.
I thought I told you I was expecting somebody.
Listen, if your party doesn't show up, would I...
Don't worry about that, Mr. Martin. This party will show up. It's really not necessary for you to entertain me.
Well, let me tell you something, Miss Novak. You may have beautiful thoughts, but you certainly hide them. And as far as your actions are concerned, you're cold and snippy like an old maid, and you're going to have a terrible time finding a man to fall in love with you.
I? An old maid? So, no man will fall in love with me. Really, Mr. Martin, you're getting funnier every minute. Why, I could show you letters that would open your eyes. No, maybe not. You probably wouldn't understand what's in them. They're written by a type of man so far above you that it's ridiculous. Ha! Huh. I have to laugh when I think of you calling me an old maid. You little insignificant clerk.
So ends Act One of our first Gulf production of the season. During the brief moment before the curtain rises on Act Two, I'd like to tell you some of the many things in store for you here in the Gulf Theater. Next week, for instance, you'll meet Clark Gable, Ann Southern, and Jeffrey Lynn in the great motion picture success, Red Dust. The following week, the pair you've all been waiting for, Vivian Leigh and Laurence Olivier in Private Lives. In future weeks, among others, you'll hear from Jack Benny, Claudette Colbert, Ernst Lubitsch, Basil Rathbone, James Cagney, Mickey Rooney, and Judy Garland. And now, I know you'd like to hear a word about the man who's really behind the Gulf Theater, your neighborhood good Gulf dealer. He hopes you'll be listening in every week. And he hopes, too, that you'll take advantage of all he can do to give you more miles of motoring satisfaction. He's ready with that helpful Gulf service and with those splendid Gulf products, Gulf gasolines, and Gulf motor oils. Next time you're out driving, stop in at the sign of the Gulf Orange Disc and meet your neighborhood good Gulf dealer. And now we return to the second chapter of our story, The Shop Around the Corner, starring Margaret Sullivan, James Stewart, Frank Morgan, Oscar Bradley's music, with Frank Tours conducting.
Yeah, well, thank you, Mr. Pryor. I'll take over from here. It was a terrible blow to Martin when he looked in the window of the cafe and discovered the unknown girl he'd been writing to for so many weeks was none other than his fellow clerk, Clara. But it was more of a blow to Clara when, after Martin left, she waited 2 hours and her dream prince didn't show up. She took it hard, poor child. You know how girls are, especially the dreamer type like Clara. Why, I once knew a girl before I was married that... Yes, well, that's another story. Another program. Clara, as I say, took it very hard. She even stayed home from work. She was so upset. Martin felt pretty bad about this, so he decided he ought to call on her, strictly in the line of duty, of course. Incidentally, whenever you hear that particular rapping on that particular door, ladies and gentlemen, that means Mr. Martin is calling on Miss Novak.
Good evening, Miss Novak.
Oh, good evening, Mr. Martin. Come in.
How are you, young lady?
I'm all right, Mr. Martin. Sorry I couldn't come to work.
Oh, that's all right. Now, you must take care of yourself.
I'm sure I'll be all right in a day or two.
But that doesn't mean that you should neglect yourself. Now, you see, I feel pretty responsible for the whole thing.
You? Oh, no, Mr. Martin. Oh, no, I think I can relieve your mind. It wasn't your fault at all. No, there's a much bigger reason, unfortunately. A psychological reason. But it's my personal problem, and I'll come out of it. It's just one of those things.
Oh, I'm very sorry. It's really a shame that you have to go through all this. But, of course, so long as it's only psychological.
Only psychological? Mr. Martin, it's true. We're in the same room, but we are not in the same planet.
Miss Novak, although I'm the victim of your remark, I must admire your exquisite way of expressing yourself. You certainly know how to put a man in his planet.
Yes, come in.
Dear Clara, a special delivery letter has just come for you.
Oh, really? Thank you, Aunt Anna.
I hope it's good news.
Well, Mr. Martin, it certainly was kind of you to drop in, but I don't want to spoil your evening.
Oh, no, it's lots of time. You go right ahead with your letter. Don't pay no attention to me.
Yeah, well, if you don't mind.
Oh. Well, it's good news.
Wonderful news, Mr. Martin. You know, if I weren't feeling so wonderful right now, I could be very mad with you.
With me? Why?
Why? Because you really spoiled my date the other night. I wasn't so wrong when I asked you not to sit down at my table. You see, this gentleman did come to the cafe. He looked in the window, saw us together, and he misunderstood.
Oh, you mean he thought you and I were friends?
Yeah, he must have. Listen to what he writes. Tell me, who is this very attractive young man? He's just the type women fall for.
Sorry I caused you so much trouble.
Oh, I'll straighten it out. Let him be a little jealous. We'll hurt him.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't seem to be much of a man, this friend of yours. He walks away. He's afraid to come over to the table because another man's sitting there.
Martin, he was not afraid, I can assure you. He's tactful. He's sensitive. He's not the kind of a man who would sit at a table uninvited. It's difficult to explain a man like him to a man like you. Where you would say black, he would say white. Where you would say ugly, he says beautiful. Mm-hmm. And where you would say, oh, maid, he says, listen, here, eyes that sparkle with fire and mystery. Oh. Vivacious. Mm-hmm. Fascinating. Mm-hmm. He says I make him think of gypsy music.
Well, I suppose there's nothing left for me to say except that I wish you a very Merry Christmas, both of you.
Thank you, Mr. Martin.
Well, good night, Miss Novak.
Good night, Mr. Martin.
Well, Clara showed up for work all right and worked like fury. She told everybody, including Martin and me, that she had an engagement for dinner on Christmas Eve, and she was all excited about it. Well, when the shop closed after a record-breaking day before Christmas, only Clara and Martin were left.
Oh, before you go, Miss Novak, you want to see something?
Hmm?
Look, how do you like this gold locket?
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah, well, why don't you try it on? I'd sort of like to see what it looks like on a girl.
I didn't know you had a girlfriend.
Oh, yes. Probably not easy for you to imagine that somebody would like a man of my type.
Oh, Mr. Martin. Don't let's start all over again. It's Christmas, and I'd like to be friends with you. Listen, you mind if I tell you something?
No.
When I first started to work here, you know, something very strange happened to me. I found myself looking at you again and again. I just couldn't take my eyes off you.
Really?
Mm-hmm. All the time I was saying to myself, Clara Novak, what's the matter with you? This Martin is not a particularly attractive man. I hope you don't mind.
No.
And listen, now comes a paradox. I caught myself falling for you.
I can't believe
it. Yes, Mr. Martin. In those first few weeks, well, there were moments when you could have swept me off my feet.
There were?
Yes. Well, you see, really, I was a different girl then. I was rather naive. All my knowledge came from books, and I just read a novel about an actress who, when she wanted to rouse a man's interest, she treated him like a dog.
Oh, that's true. You treated him like a dog, all right.
Yes, but instead of licking my hand, you barked.
Oh, well, that's all forgotten now, isn't it?
Oh, well, and now you go to see your girlfriend. By the way, is it serious?
Yes, very.
We might both be engaged Monday morning.
I think we will.
Oh, I don't want you to misunderstand. In my case, I just say it might happen. You see, he's coming to my house tonight to see me at 8 o'clock.
As a matter of fact, I can tell you that it will happen.
What? How do you know?
Oh, we'll go into that.
Mr. Martin, what do you mean it will happen?
Well, I might just as well tell you. He came to see me.
Who?
Well, your fiancé. He came last night. Now, you shouldn't have told him who I am. You see, I spent a very uncomfortable hour. He apparently didn't believe it when you wrote him that I meant nothing to you, you see.
I can't get in my head. Come to see you? Oh, no, that doesn't sound like him at all.
Oh, no, but I straightened everything out. It's all right. Now, don't worry. In a little while, you'll be Mrs. Popkin.
Mrs. Popkin?
Popkin? Wasn't that his name? Popkin? I thought that's what he told me.
Oh, Popkin, oh, yes, that's right, Popkin.
And a very nice fellow, very nice. I congratulate you.
Yes, thank you. I think he's a very attractive man, don't you?
Oh, yes. For his type, I would say yes.
Would you really classify him as a definite type?
Absolutely. And don't you try and change him now. Don't put him on a diet. Don't.
Would you call him fat?
Well, that's a matter of opinion. Now, if I were a girl and had to choose between a young, good-for-nothing with lots of hair and a fine, solid, mature citizen, I'd pick Matthias Popkin every time.
But he has a fine mind, don't you think? Didn't he impress you as being rather witty?
Well, I don't know. He struck me as being sort of depressed, but of course it's unfair to judge a man who's out of a job.
Out of a job? Why, he never told me.
Well, I showed you how sensitive he is, but don't worry. Now, he feels that both of you can live very nicely on your salary.
Terrible. Oh, I'm outraged. I never dreamed he was materialistic like this. If you could read his letters, such ideals. Well, I could quote you passages. To love is to be two and yet one. A man
and
a
woman blended as angels, heaven itself.
How did you know that?
That's by Victor Hugo. He stole that.
Oh, no. I thought I was the inspiration of all those beautiful thoughts. Now I find he was just copying the words out of a book. He probably didn't mean a single one of them.
Oh, I'm sorry you feel this way. I hate to think I spoiled your Christmas.
That's all right. I guess I really ought to thank you. Well, I guess I'd better be going.
Well, Clara, if I'd known in the beginning how you really felt about me, things would have been different. You know what I wish would happen? When your bell rings at 8 o'clock tonight and you open the door, instead of Popkin, I come in.
It's very sweet of you to try to cheer me up. But I think we'd better say goodnight. You have an engagement. Yes, and so have I. And I shouldn't be late. Not here yet, and I'll thank you not to joke about it.
Clara, couldn't I take his place?
Please, you're only making it more difficult for me.
Oh, Clara, my darling.
Oh, no, you mustn't put your arms around me.
Dearest, sweetest Clara, I can't stand it any longer. Please, take your key.
Please.
Open post office box 237 and take me out of my envelope.
Really?
And kiss
you
me.
You mustn't. Box 237?
Dear friend.
You. Dear friend.
Oh, my darling.
Mr. Popkin. Dear Mr. Popkin.
Yeah, well, that's about the size of it. Of course, they got married. They're very happy now, those two. And now, if you should ever need some very fine leather goods or anything in the novelty line...
Oh,
Margaret Sullivan, James Stewart, and Frank Morgan for a really grand performance.
And that was the thoroughly magnificent The Shop Around the Corner, starring James Stewart, Margaret Sullivan, and the irrepressible Frank Morgan, the Wizard of Oz himself.
Steve McQueen and Paul Newman race against time as one tiny spark becomes a night of blazing suspense. The towering inferno.
It's out of control. It's coming your way.
...20th Century Fox and Warner Brothers present Irwin Allen's production of The Towering Inferno.
So to enter our competition for this week, to win a Blu-ray copy of The Towering Inferno, all you have to do is go to our Facebook page, that's facebook.com/attaboyclarence, and like the competition post, which you'll find on the page there. Or follow us on Twitter at attaboyc, that's A-T-T-A-B-O-Y-C, and retweet the competition post you'll see there. Once again, everyone, if you like old-time radio, go to otrplus.com. They're fantastic fellows. And I will see you next week. Thank you so much for listening. Take care, and I will see you next week. Bye for now.